Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Red Men Weekly podcast, a show where we bring you the best clips from some of our amazing Red Men Plus content that went out over the previous few days. And yeah, I'm going to kick you off with a final word, Joe, but I'm not going to subject you to the final word, Joe, after Brighton. That would be very, very mean. Instead, I had the pleasure of talking to Ian and to Chloe after the game against Wolves. So yeah, check out what we had to say after Liverpool finally won a game of footy.
I thought the way he played that right-hand side midfield position was a lot different than everyone else plays it, because he didn't go near the touchline, really. When Henderson plays it, he likes running on that overlap or going out wide. Him and Trent sometimes get each other's way. Harvey Elliott effectively plays right wing sometimes when he goes there. Keita was very central. He was almost raking, but he was bombing forward constantly, and he was almost saying to Elliott and Milner at first, and then even Gomez a bit later on, you deal with that side, I'm in this channel. And I'm going to, that's why I thought he was able to press more, because he wasn't out the way. He was closer to the action. It was a different, again, I don't know if that's a Naby Keita specific thing. If it's something that Liverpool should look at going forward, it might be. Because it felt like it's hard to press when you're covering over there as well. It was almost like Liverpool, like, right, we'll let the winger or the fullback have it. But Naby being a little bit more in what you'd call like a right-hand side channel rather than right midfield, I thought tactically that was a big shift from previous games. Again, I don't know if it's him specific or it was just because that they've decided they needed to do something, but it worked.
When Naby Keita plays, he generally plays well. I think the criticism he gets is that he doesn't spend enough time on the pitch. He seems to be a player to me that follows instructions. He seems to be the most disciplined, the one of the midfield we've got in our squad. He gives him the job to do, and he'll go and do it. You never ever see Klopp shouting Naby. You never ever see him getting. He always seems to be given the job and going to do it, and he did it spot on last night. He was absolutely perfect. The only problem I have with Naby is I think he jumps out of too many challenges. But I think because of his injury record, I think he'd be.
There was one in the second half where it wasn't really a little bit, but I thought he was excellent.
To be fair to him, what the other thing you talk about, our players sticking out wide, it gave license for Milner and Elliott to have the space, because Naby Keita had dragged one of their midfielders who would usually cover the wing into the middle of the park, and every time we broke or we won the ball up high, Keita or Thiago was carrying the ball with them through the centre of the pitch, which meant we had loads of space out for Harvey Elliott to do whatever he wanted. Even Harvey Elliott's goal comes from him being more centred. He runs directly towards the centre-halves. And him in that role, he was obviously brilliant, but it also just meant that it created more space for other players around him.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the goal in a second, but I want to talk about... I said this, it was like a streetwise performance. Keita was really good at this, and a few others, just fouling people. James Milner got the most yellow, non-yellow card. It was borderline yellow, but he did it. Like, stop on counter-attacks. If you could stop, there's a way to stop getting counter-attacked on. Don't lose the ball, well, that's impossible. And if you do lose it, foul them straight away. Or press them, if they're facing their own goal and you press, if they look like they're going to play out of it, just kick them on the floor. I thought, listen, it's not like... I don't know, it's not like the beautiful game kind of thing, but there's a streetwise nature to it. If you worry about counter-attacks, don't get counter-attacks on. Thiago took a yellow card, again, like he often does, for the same reason. But it was weird that it was essentially a team of kids, but like Harvey, Carvalho, especially Naby was good at it, Pacheta, Thiago again. Just when you had to make a foul, yes, and I'll take the foul. Costa's done it as well. Yeah, that's fine.
They were clever fouls. We've been fouling because of our midfield been that poor over the last few games, but we were fouling earlier.
On
the edge of the centre circle rather than the edge of the penalty area. It's like you said, it's streetwise, but the best teams do it. The Real Madrid's, the Man City's, the Liverpool's, we do it. And it seems like ages since we've been doing the dark arts properly and right for
I
a
felt,
while.
I felt it was Brighton, they were dumb. Liverpool were quite dumb. And like playing out and like just certain decisions. It was like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we throwing it to the edge of our box when we're under the cosh away from home? Like, chill your beans, everyone calm down. Why aren't we far? Why are we until he gets to there to foul, and why aren't we booting him up there? It felt like, and again, I say this to you, Chloe, it was like, it's a relatively young Liverpool side that were out there, but it played with a maturity of, right, yeah, well, we know we're a bit iffy defensively. We've got a backup goalie, and I think Keller's good, but like, basically, of Liverpool's what Liverpool would probably class their best back five, none of them are playing.
Yep.
I think if Jürgen was discussing it, I mean, there's a Konate, Matip, but you know what I'm saying, roughly speaking. Okay, well, one way to protect them is just don't let people just constantly run through them or run at them. Now, if we have to stop an attack, we'll stop an attack. We can live with that.
Yeah, and it's also a case of being younger and in the split seconds. I mean, I'm not too sure who got yellow. I think it was just Thiago, was it not? Maybe Nat Phillips also got a yellow. But
Gomez got one late on for
doing something. Well,
he threw someone on the floor off the ball.
Oh, is that what he did?
Yeah, it was funny.
But it was also the kind of thing of, okay, well, this guy's got past me. I'm just going to foul him now anyway. And when you're younger, maybe you panic and you foul him anyway. But we fouled him in good areas where it wasn't like a breakaway.
And it wasn't a yellow card.
Exactly, where Jordan Henderson probably is like, no, I trust Fabinho enough to come back, so I'm not actually going to foul him here. I'll just run alongside him. Fabinho can come out and I'll try and cover him. Where maybe we didn't have that. The lads were like, we're not covering him. Once he gets past you, I'm just going to bring him down because I can't let him get there. And
I'd love to hope it was an instruction from the manager as well. Just like, wise up. Right then, let's move on to the goal. And obviously, 13 minutes in, it turns out to be the only goal of the game. And if you're going to score a goal to win a game, a cup game, you might as well score this one. Again, I think the goalies had a shocker. I think you have to put that in first place. But like, what I like from Elliot is that he has the vision to see him. Because I don't think Harvey Elliott's ever... His first thought is probably not, I'm going to shoot from here. His first thought is, there's James Milner, fucking bombing it.
Yeah.
But he's funny, in his interview after the game, Harvey had no Milner shouted to shoot. He spotted it as well. Yeah. He noticed the goal, he was having a stinker. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing spotting it, it's another thing capitalising on it. Because you can lob that over the bar, or you can hit it straight after goal. He got the combination of pace and
elevation/angle,
perfect. It was hard enough to beat him. It wasn't too high that it was going to lob over the bar or hit the bar, whatever. It was a very, very, very well-taken goal from Harvey Elliott, and it meant a lot to him as well.
But every time he scores, you can see how much it means to Harvey Elliott. He's one of us, but he's on the pitch, isn't he? That's the way I look at him. I absolutely love Harvey Elliott, and I think the criticism he's been getting has been absolutely uncalled for. So when he scored that goal, like that, I probably celebrated just as much as he did. I was absolutely made up for him. The run, the purpose. Like I said, I was expecting to wing it to Milner. But when he hit that shot, I was like, Jesus, that's going in.
You knew straight away. You could tell straight away.
As soon as he hit it. Absolutely amazing. Made a great goal. Like I said, if Keller lets that in, I'm absolutely fuming, by the way. But...
And he's a good goalie as well. He's just got himself caught out, and he's in no man's land.
But, yeah... It's a goal that Harvey Elliott will be watching on repeat for the next few weeks, definitely.
What did you think of him in the front three? Because the criticism's been, Chloe, he lacks a bit of pace. Well, he does lack pace to play in that front three, and I get that. Especially compared to, you know, your Mo Salah, Diaz's, etc., who are a bit quicker than him. But he does play it in a slightly different way, of course. I think he might have the sticks been uncalled for. I don't think the frustration's been with him per se. I think it's been the fact that Jürgen's constantly got to go and go and go, and it looked like he needed to come out the side. But... It looks like Liverpool are going to try and make him a midfielder. He played right wing because they were giving Mo Salah a rest. That's kind of where we're at with it now. But I did think from looking comfortable, he did look more comfortable out on that right hand side. Less defensive responsibilities. I don't know where his future is in terms of his best position. Liverpool probably think it's midfield, I don't know, but he did look a bit more comfortable out on that right hand side, I thought anyway.
Yeah, he did. Harvey Elliott, don't get me wrong, can do the eight. He can't do it game in, game out, though. It's a lot, especially at 19. He might be able to do that in 5 years' time, 3 years' time. You just never know. The thing is he doesn't have the pace to be a winger, which is what we use in our system. That's what Salah is. It's what Mane is. It's what Nunes is, Diaz. They all have pace. They can get it to the byline, but they've also got the skill to cut inside. He's most definitely got the skill to cut inside. He doesn't like using his right foot that much, which gives me a worry if he goes down on the right. People know you're probably just going to cut inside. But he looked more comfortable. He looked like he had more freedom. You know, he wasn't constantly thinking, what's behind me here? What's behind me here? And look, it's one of them where... I don't know what his future is because he doesn't have the pace, but he clearly looked much more comfortable there and you can see that's where he's been playing. And I think his skill was brilliant. The way he picked up the ball, he drove, he took players on. The triangle, I think there was a specific one with Gakpo where he shoots from like a really, really tight angle and I didn't expect it to go in. But the movement between him and Milner, the way he dropped off and then waited until the last minute to thread a ball through. His vision was brilliant there. You've got the problem of Salah comes back and he's not replacing Salah. But yeah, a really, really brilliant night for him. And I think he's a superstar and I think he'll be brilliant. I think he might alternate between the roles though because I don't think he can do the 8 week in, week out.
Which is fair enough, I suppose. And there's not be opportunities. We saw Salah play 10 to 4 the other yesterday, so the opportunities might come up. Let's move on then to, I think, I know BBC give Harvey the man of the match. I would have given it to Stefan Bacetic personally. I thought he was outstanding. Maybe we've seen a little, at the end of the game, might be a little reason why we haven't seen too much of him, because he has to go off, he's cramping up after like an hour or so, which again, maybe we saw against Man City a little bit of that as well, where it looked like at times, maybe a little bit too much off for him this. But if he can work on that and get fitter, which I'm sure he can do with the team around him and stuff, and bear in mind he's been injured as well, so maybe that's probably that could have contributed to that in fairness to him. But that was the best DM performance of a Liverpool player all season, I thought. I don't know if it's a case of just legs, but not just without the ball, where he was excellent with the ball, he was taking it on the half turn, he has that one where he sells the fella down the river with a little shuffle. I thought he was outstanding, and like I say, the Liverpool got lots of midfield issues, there's tons of them, and the future might include Stefan Bajčetić, so if they let 3 go, they might only bring 2 in and promote him. But he's made the case for himself to be playing the team now. He was well better than anything we've put out in that number 6 position for a long time, I thought. He had a very strong game.
He was cool as a cucumber. He never, ever seemed flustered during the game at all.
He's big as well, by the way. He's a big fella. You think when you're a young kid, like, if you just think of like a young Spanish player, I think just my head goes like a little Gavi or a little Pedro. I mean, no, he's got Serbian heritage, and maybe that's part of his own, because the Serbian team are quite big lads. But I thought, physically, that's what you worry about a young lad playing midfield. But he's got no problems for strength and stuff. When he reads the game, he was very impressive.
I think he's deceivingly pacey as well. I think when he's got the ball, he can move when he's got that ball.
Big long strides.
He just moves. Like I said, he was dead cool last night. He never seemed flustered at any point. I thought when he went off was when we lost control of the game. I thought he absolutely ran the midfield last night. And it was close between him and Elliot, I think, for man of the match. But I just think because of the role Bacetic did and how important his role was last night, he deserved man of the match for me.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It was nice to talk about the Reds actually winning the game for a change. That was boss indeed. Right then, moving on to the next show that I want to bring you. One of our expert insight shows. We try and get as many of these as possible. We go and try and find the people who you guys want to hear from, experts in their field. And yet today's one was an absolute belter. At Pletigo, Florian Plettenberg himself, transfer guru, Geno extraordinaire, Dan Clubb, sat down with him to talk about loads of the names who are being linked with moves to Liverpool Football Club. Check this out.
The biggest one, Florian, I'm sure you're aware, is Jude Bellingham. This is a story that has been building over the last few months, really now. And it's a story you tweeted about just this morning. You said the Liverpool bosses are still optimistic to sign him in the summer, and talks have took place, but there hasn't been any sort of conversation between himself and Jurgen Klopp yet, and there's been no official offer either. Do you want to sort of talk to us about the Bellingham situation a little bit more?
Well, it's one of the biggest pokers in the next weeks and month. That's for sure. He's one of our superstars in the Bundesliga. Amazing development, but very difficult situation for him and for Dortmund. As you can imagine, they don't have fun with situations like this. When we remember the situation about Sancho and Erling Haaland. And we all expect the same thing now with Jude Bellingham. He's totally professional. He's back in team training. He's very ambitious, as we hear that. But we get the feeling from Borussia Dortmund that they are very strict at the moment. And the kind of a sporting director, Sebastian Kehl, he's very on point in his interviews and in his statements. And he made clear a few days ago there are no offers for Jude Bellingham, not from Real Madrid, not from Manchester City, and not from from Liverpool. So this is also something I heard from my calls and my text messages in the last 48 hours. But I hear from Liverpool that they are very, very optimistic to get him. They had talks with him, with his management or whatever. And I heard that Julian Ward is one of the guys who's pushing for him. By the way, that's his task at the moment. But I have the confirmation and the exclusive that there were no talks between Klopp and Jude Bellingham so far.
Yeah, that's interesting. Liverpool, I mean, every single fan certainly wants Jude Bellingham. He's a wonderful talent, like you said. You also mentioned in the tweet that Liverpool have offered him the chance to become the new Steven Gerrard. Just how do you envisage that sale sort of happening? Like, do you think Liverpool are offering the freedom in midfield or we can build a team around you? Is it that sort of thing?
I know, and that's my information. Jude Bellingham is the top target for Liverpool in the summer. And I have tweeted it month ago, because I had that info around Jurgen Klopp, and Jurgen Klopp is intensively pushing for that Jude Bellingham player. Mm-hmm. And I have been told that he is one of the key figures in the future. They want to build the midfield around that Jude Bellingham, but it's not easy to get him. And as you know, Jurgen Klopp has a lot of tasks within the team. It's not easy, and we hear clearly, and he has confirmed that he doesn't think about resigning. He wants to continue. He wants to fulfill his contract. He's very ambitious. He has no ambition to go in the Bundesliga or to become the German manager at this stage. He wants to have success with Liverpool, and we hear that the bosses say, okay, it's not an easy situation right now. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult season, but we trust you. We go with you through that season. And in the summer, we will give you some top transfers. Not in the window, Gakpo, and now that's probably fine. But Jude Bellingham is the man they want. But we also hear, and you can explain it better than I can, it's a tricky situation with the bosses, with the owners. Mm-hmm. And the question is, who could pay him? Who will pay him?
Yeah, the owners are going through a sale of sorts, I think, at the moment. A lot of the reports are suggesting it's just going to be sort of a minority stake and not a full sale. So it's an interesting sort of development. I think a lot of people were surprised that we signed Gakpo, because for the owners to sort of pull the trigger on another signing when this takeover stuff's going on behind the scenes is interesting. Just coming back to Bellingham then, it's great to hear that we're back in Jurgen Klopp. Like, I personally and loads of Liverpool fans would put their life on Jurgen Klopp, essentially. We adore the man. Just on Bellingham, though, there's been some reports about maybe Dortmund pushing for a new contract to sort of tie him down a little bit longer. Is that a possibility?
Well, honestly, I don't think that Dortmund have big chances to keep him. We hear that he has no release clause in his contract in this summer.
Yeah.
So it's a question of the price. It's a question of offers. It's very hard to estimate right now how big the chances are for other top clubs. Is Real Madrid able to pay more than 100 million euro for him? Mm-hmm. Is Liverpool able to pay that? Is Manchester City able to pay that? That's totally open. But we hear it clearly from Borussia Dortmund. Their price tag is around 100 until 150 million euro for summer, and he's worth that. As I told you, he's a superstar. He has so much development, but this is also a reason why he's not a player for Bayern Munich at this stage. For sure, he's on the list, but Bayern Munich can't pay that price. And back to Gerard. To my information, they say in the club, okay, maybe he's our new Gerard. And Jude, can you imagine to have a career like Gerard, not only for 2 or 3 years in Liverpool? We want to create a team around you in the future. And I'm convinced if he would go to Liverpool, mm-hmm. then we also speak about a crazy contract like we have seen it with Mudryk and Chelsea.
Yeah, I was going to mention the contract and potentially the fee. Do you think fee-wise, obviously, you're talking over 100 million euros, but contract-wise, then, do you think you're talking 8.5 years, I think, the Mudryk deal? Do you think we could be talking about something similar? And also, on Bellingham, do you see it as Liverpool, Real Madrid, and then Manchester City?
Well, very hard to estimate. I would say he's balanced between City and Liverpool, but we also get information that he's very open to go to Liverpool. I have no information about Real Madrid to make that clear. And if I have information, I tell you that. And if I don't have any information, I tell you that too.
Yeah.
So I can't speak about Bellingham and Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But all I hear at this stage, Liverpool and Bellingham, it's very positive. Klopp is pushing. And I'm convinced he will speak to Bellingham maybe in the next weeks or months, but this is not easy. First, they have to speak with Dortmund, mm-hmm. And they need the permission to speak with Bellingham. And as you know, Dortmund and Jurgen Klopp, they are they have a very, very good relation. And I think there will be developments in the next weeks and months. And I'm convinced that Dortmund wants to have a fast decision because Bellingham's future is a daily topic at Dortmund, mm-hmm. and no one is interested in this topic. So, but I would also say the situation with Pep Guardiola and with Erling Haaland, a close friend of Bellingham, I think you have to take them very, very serious. And as you know, Manchester City, they have the money. Mm. Actually, we are in research about Ilkay Gundogan. Maybe that's a player who could leave Manchester City. Then they have one more place and one more position free in the midfield. Open race.
Thanks very much to Dan and to Florian there. Go and check out, yeah, like I say, expert insights available every week. You've got a different famous voice giving you guys the information that you need to know. Speaking of information that you desperately need to know, this week's Journo Insight Show with Neil Jones. Yeah, I love having Neil in here every single week. A man who follows Liverpool up and down the country as a journalist, gets all the behind the scenes, gossip, news rumours and all that kind of stuff. Well, yeah, this week me and Neil had a bit of a chat about Brighton's Moises Caicedo. So yeah, here's what Neil had to say. Are Liverpool, are they interested in him? Are they going to try and sign him? Let's find out what goals Neil Jones had to say. Let's start with Moises Caicedo, because I thought it was interesting. Obviously, the latest on him is that Chelsea had a bid rejected, £55 million, I think David Ornstein reported rejected. But Darmish Sheth, which is easy to say, of Sky Sports, says Chelsea are one of the three clubs who've not given up on signing him. Liverpool remain interested. We've heard this a while now. Is this just the case, I might as well throw it to you, that the money's got too much? Because if they're after 55 million getting rejected, and there's talk that Brighton, we know, are good sellers, you know, you're probably looking to add another 20 million quid on that one. Then Liverpool remain interested, yeah, that's all well and good, but are we back just down to a transfer fee, do you think?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, I had a conversation with Moises Caicedo this week with someone who, you know, I sort of tentatively mentioned 50 mil, and they sort of said there'll be more than that, you know. Obviously, it will be. I think it'll be a lot more than that. If you think of, they got, what was it, 55 plus for Mark Cucurella.
Yeah. They're just selling Trossard as well, so they don't want too much change.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think Brighton will sell this month. I've said that for a few weeks. It would need some justification from Brighton if they were to do it. You know, if you were sort of a Brighton fan, you'd be looking up where they're going, and you'd say, well, why would you do that in the middle of the season? And his value is not going to go down between now and then, unless he gets a bad injury. Touch wood, hopefully he doesn't. Obviously, Chelsea are buying everyone, aren't they? That sort of seems to be their way at the moment. They're going to get the guy from PSV Eindhoven, Madueke. They just bought Mudryk. There'll be others coming in, I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the other Brighton midfielders on their agenda at some point, McAllister. But yeah, he's going to go to a Champions League level club. Obviously Chelsea and Liverpool at the moment. Chelsea and Liverpool, unfortunately, aren't at that level at the moment. Yeah, he's going to move down the Premier League. But he's going to move to that kind of, you know, elite club. And I think he's going to go for elite money as well. I think Liverpool would like to have him. I think there'll be a lot of clubs, and Liverpool will be one of them, who will be asking their scouting departments, where were we? You know, why has this guy come from, you know, South America, spent a year on loan in Belgium, played a few games for Brighton, and all of a sudden he's an 80-90 million pound player, or 75-80 million pound player. You know, could we have done that? Liverpool have had some success with players from South America. You know, you think of, they've been aware of, you know, players like Firmino, Alisson, very early on, and been able to monitor their progress. You think of, you know, they've got a lad called Anderson Arroyo who they spotted at a youth tournament, who's parked on loan in Spain and places like that. So, yeah, it wouldn't have been beyond the realms for them to be aware of Moises Caicedo. You would hope they were, but I think there'll be questions asked as to why, you know, why we haven't sort of been able to get him for the £4 or 5 million rather than the 75-80 million.
Yeah, we keep hearing Liverpool are interested in loads of lads, but we said last week, didn't we? Your gut feeling, this wasn't based on anything, this was your opinion, was that you still thought you were probably going to sign a midfielder if you had to have a guess. Has anything changed in the last week from your... Because if anything, it feels like the shutters have come even further down. Jürgen spoke about it again. He had a bit of a go, didn't he, in the press conference, having a little bite back about the money stuff as well. It almost felt like the shutters had come down, as if to say, no, it's not happening even more now.
Yeah, but he said that in the summer, didn't he? You know,
yeah.
I wrote, you know, yeah, plenty of times Jürgen Klopp dismisses the idea of Liverpool signing a new player. I think he'd done it last January, but we, you know, now we're done for the window. There's Luis Diaz a week later or two weeks later. My gut was always that it'd be an opportunistic signing, a loan player or a short-term sort of addition. I still think there's a chance of that. You know, there's still 10 days left. There's still plenty of time for calves and hamstrings and issues to emerge. We've seen a story this week about Arthur Melo, potentially, you know, interest from Brazil. Wouldn't at all amaze me. I'm not saying it's going to happen or it is happening, but it wouldn't amaze me at all if you got his loan kiboshed and someone else coming in and taking that spot. So I think there's still opportunities. I've learned long ago not to write that things like Liverpool have done or no further arrival. You know, you can certainly reflect that the mood music is that people at the club are saying, no, we don't think so. But I still think there's possibilities for Liverpool, and I still think they should be doing something.
He mentioned, didn't he, as well, he started talking about Champions League registrations and Premier League registrations, squad size. It does feel it would have to be someone maybe would have to go out before they did it, potentially. Arthur's a potential option. Obviously, my guess is if Virgil wasn't injured, Matt Phillips could have been that guy again.
Adrian,
maybe. There are options there, but that's the other thing that you probably have to throw into this as well. It's like everyone has a little go, well, sell to buy and all that kind of stuff. This might not be a money thing, sell to buy. It might just be a room within the squad. They decided that they had to go and sign the forward because loads of them were injured. And listen, they have been proven right, haven't they? If you think about it, because he had to play every single game since he arrived. But it does feel like, the size of the squad in general, perhaps it would to facilitate it, someone would have to leave.
Yeah.
And that, again, there are a couple of half options, but there's no one who you go, right, he's off. Like, they couldn't really afford to let Naby or Ox go right now, for example, you would think.
No.
It's only, there are a couple of fringe ones, but there's no, like, glaring, he goes, he comes in. That isn't there, really.
Yeah, no, there's no obvious sales, of course. I mean, you're right, like, Nat Phillips might have been one that poor lad seems to always just sort of get... I say, poor lad, he's playing for Liverpool, he's getting paid. But, you know, he's not getting football, is he? You know, yeah, I should do another one.
I thought he was good the other day.
He came on and done well. I love him. Always does, really, doesn't he? You know, like he's very much a reliable customer, really. That is possible. I mean, Jürgen, it's obviously been a discussion. I think there's something around Bicetti's becoming club trained at some point. I don't know if it's this January or next January, but he's not far off, and that will help definitely in terms of squad registrations. Obviously, yeah, there's a few players who are coming to the end of their time. Ox, Keita, Firmino, well, maybe not Firmino, Milner, but I don't see any of them leaving in this month. Certainly not Keita, certainly not Firmino, certainly not Milner. It isn't as simple as, you know, maybe there was one a couple of years ago, wasn't it? Minamino went out on loan, didn't he, on deadline day, and they brought in Kabak and Davis. I think there was a bit of that linked to that. It doesn't feel like it's that, but you look at Arthur Melos in the squad, he's played 13 minutes, you know, he's registered. Adrian's, you've got him there, you could easily replace an Adrian with a Quivín Kelleher, Harvey Davis, or whoever. Club trained player, so yeah, there's options there for Liverpool, definitely.
Right then, that is obviously a story that'll develop. We'll keep an eye on that one. There's a very good chance he's probably playing for Chelsea. He might even play against us the weekend, for all we know, given how Todd Bowley is splashing the cash around. Right then, finally, this week's deep dive show, our newest show, and it's proving to be very, very, very popular. We have Chris Pajak and Josh Williams analysing loads and loads of different stuff about the Reds. One of these shows is available on YouTube each and every week if you haven't checked this out, and then one of them is available on Red Men Plus. You might have already checked out the free one. I'm going to give you a little sneaky peek at what's behind the Red Men Plus paywall this week's edition of The Deep Dive.
So my hypothesis this week is whether Liverpool have changed their attacking focal point away from Mo Salah, Josh, and I haven't come up with an answer as yet. I thought we could try and work that together. I think sometimes it's very easy to go, this is the way type of thing, very Mandalorian. But ultimately, sometimes you can look at data and there is no answer. There's only, well, did you prove or disprove it, basically. And sometimes you can't really do either. And I think sometimes for me, anyway, I don't mind it being open-ended, is what I'm trying to say, is I've got a theory. Let's see if we can prove it right or wrong, essentially.
Yeah, well, I have a tendency with Salah, right? So, like, just because he's Salah, I've looked into his numbers over the years, you know, since, like, 2017 when he first arrived and that, and it's got to a point now with me where I'm just like, he's fine. He's always just fine. So I've almost stopped looking. And whenever there's a kind of crisis around his game, people talking about him, narrative and things like that, I usually just ignore it as noise. But on the back of this being a topic this week, I did have a bit of a deeper look into him. And some of the numbers are quite surprising.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna have a look at we've got some graphics first of all, I suppose. I phoned you up the other day. I said I've got this idea for the show, and I said to you, right, I've got this from, and you were already typing understat.com in when I said to you what I was doing, because I don't think that Liverpool are working Salah into positions on the field where he scores from open play often enough. Now, sometimes that's quite difficult when you're looking at like two seasons comparatively, but we're almost, well, are we at the exact halfway point of a season?
I think we are, yeah.
So it kind of fell in really nicely, and I know it doesn't always work that, you know, half as many numbers, etc., etc., but from a comparison standpoint, it makes it quite easy. So what I've got is, his goals from 22-23 first, just to start us off. And you can see on your screens now, if you're listening, he's got four goals from open play this season. So three of his Premier League goals this season were from corners. Not necessarily the header on a corner, but from the corner, second phase or third phase even sometimes. So what we've really got is just the four goals from open play. And one of those goals from open play was a complete fuck-up from Eric Dier against Tottenham, where the ball wasn't very good. Eric Dier went to head the ball back to his goalkeeper inexplicably and passed it to Salah just on the edge of the penalty box. So actually, I think it's fair to say he's got three goals from open play in terms of Liverpool's build-up side of thing. So starting with that, and when I spoke to you, what was the next thing for you to sort of dig in and do some research on? Where did you go next?
Well, it's interesting, actually. I've just double-checked now while you were speaking. Another one of those goals was the Alisson assist against Manchester City, which it is open play, but at the same time, it's, you could arguably call that a set piece coming from a goal kick. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not exactly like he's been heavily involved. But yeah,
so he's got two goals from open play. With
But yeah, if you look at his numbers, I just kind of had a glance across the board, really. Where has he suffered any kind of decline? And I think Nunes in particular is an interesting addition, considering he's totally different to the partner that Salah's had for the past 5 years. We've said before numerous times, Firmino comes away from goal, Nunes goes towards it. That massively impacts the movements and the openings that Salah gets as kind of the man on the side, really. So I think one of the interesting things I realised was Liverpool are averaging about 16.6 shots on a per 90 basis in the Premier League this season.
Mm-hmm.
And Nunes is responsible for about 34% of that.
Yeah.
Salah down at 20%. So immediately there, based on the shots at least, that's in terms of who's taking the shot, by the way.
Yeah.
Not to do with creation or anything like that. But in terms of finishing the move, the guys have put the ball in the net. Nunes is obviously more of the man for Liverpool. But Salah's number, it's not massively different from last season. He did shoot more last season, and he was responsible for about 23% of Liverpool's shot count. So, slight decline. But I do think it offers an insight into Nunes coming in and suddenly being this kind of, like, magnet for chances in the penalty box.
Yeah, absolutely. I broke it down a couple of different ways and I've got slightly different figures at a point than you. But I had 59 shots from Salah so far this season. Now, as a percentage of forwards, he had 29% of the shots this season. And last season, he had 33% of the shots from the forwards last season. So we had the same idea, but I just looked at it slightly differently in terms of you've looked at it as the whole squad and I've looked at it as in terms of the forwards. So in terms of Salah, his shots per 90 for Salah is 3.33. Firmino is 3.2. Darwin Nunes is 5.68 shots per 90. Last season, shots per 90, 3.13 for Mane, 4.33 and 3.43 and 3.57. for Jota and Luis Diaz. So he's basically dropped the shot per 90.
Yeah.
And that shot per 90 is more than been made up for by Darwin Nunes, hasn't it?
Yeah. You could argue he's almost given Nunes a few shots in a way. Nunes has kind of took them off him in a way. Because Nunes is 5.6, 5.7 efforts on a per 90 basis is ridiculous. Like, that's top of the Premier League comfortably. So I mentioned to you on the phone, didn't I, that I think it presents a similar dynamic to me to when Salah was at Roma and you had Edin Dzeko up front. Salah scored goals, Salah registered assists, but in terms of being the main man in the attack, the focal point, it was Dzeko, and Dzeko got something like 30 Serie A goals that season, the year before Liverpool bought him, bought Salah, that is. So I think this was kind of predictable almost, that once Nunes comes in and he's that penalty box magnet, Salah's going to maybe, whether he's going to consciously adapt his game or whether it's going to be a natural thing that just happens, whether he's aware of it or not. I still think he's always going to be an extremely dangerous player. I think he's always going to be a positive threat. But in terms of how he impacts the game and how involved he is, I do think there's some slight differences now.
Thanks very much to Chris. Thanks very much to Josh for that one. Like I said, that show is available on Redmen Plus as well. And there is one on YouTube. All the clips that you've heard today, they are all from our amazing Redmen Plus shows. If you haven't already and you want to check them out in full, whether it's in podcast or in video format, obviously you're listening to this as a podcast, so you're obviously a podcast fan. The good news is if you sign up to Redmen Plus, you can download the shows into your native podcasting app. You'll get instructions how to do that when you sign up. Very, very simple. You just put a couple of details in, bit of password in, and jobs are good. And yeah, redmenplus.com for that one. If you're a Spotify user and you want to get it into your Spotify app, just search for Redmen Plus podcasts on Spotify. You can pay directly to them via the app, and you can get it all available in podcast form as well. You don't get the videos, but if you're an avid podcast listener on Spotify, we've got you covered there as well. But either way, do go and check out the Redmen Plus content. We're sure you'll enjoy it. There's plenty more to come over the next couple of weeks. We're having a few changes. We're doing a bit of a reboot of our content. Loads and loads of new shows. some stuff that I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to or watching. So yeah, do go and check it all out, and we'll be back next week on Red Men Weekly. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.